You're listening to Pollinate, a podcast on data, design, and the people that bring them to life. Brought to you by Stamen Design. Hey folks, this is Ross Thorne, a cartographer here at Stamen, as well as the producer of the podcast. Wanted to say thank you for a great year. We've grown a lot, and thanks to you all for sharing the podcast, tweeting about it, and tweeting at us. It's been awesome and really cool to see, so we really appreciate that. We just got a little bit of bonus content here for you from the last episode, a conversation between Catherine Madden, Eric Rodenbeck, and RJ Andrews. A little bit of the behind-the-scenes work that RJ had experienced when actually making this book series come to life in a physical form. We've got some exciting stuff coming in the new year, so stay tuned, and thanks.
I'm just not only fascinated by your relationship and the fact that you have such a deep fascination that led you to like put so much time and heart into the creation of these books, but like how? How did they come together? Like you have so many rich design details. And I also know that this was like a big expensive decision that you had to crowdfund at first. Like, can you just maybe walk through like the big moments of like decision points through the process of making the books?
Yeah. So I think we have this idea that my experience publishing, not creating or writing, but publishing Info We Trust, was disappointing across a number of dimensions. And that was an important milestone that the next time I knew I liked books, but I didn't like, and this is very typical as you learn as a brand new author, is that many authors do not enjoy their publishing process. And so, and this is also the strong tradition of information graphics of really, really talented information graphic book creators getting pissed off and going and doing it on their own. And, you know, Edward Tufte is the most famous example of this, but before him was Willard Brinton. And Brinton produced an iconic book called Graphic Methods for Presenting Facts around World War I. And then just before World War II, he produced Graphic Presentation. And I'm looking behind me because they're both on the shelf. And Graphic Presentation is a masterwork. It's a masterpiece. It's an absolute masterpiece. It's a book that I'm interested in maybe creating a facsimile of in the future. And so that's like the first milestone is like, if we're going to actually produce information graphics in an analog fashion on dead trees, it has to be really good. Because if not really good, you should just send people a PDF. Like it has to be better than a PDF. Like the bar, because we have a digital culture, the bar is insanely high for something to deserve to exist as a book. I just believe that.
Thank you.
I have a lot of books, you know, published in the last decade, and it's just like, it's not worth it. Those books would be better as a PDF. All right. So that's a critical, but I think important starting point. And so there's this idea of the series slowly, you know, kind of materializing in my head and me making a lot of mock-ups and doing some really crude research on how to do this. And I forget, you know, how I became aware enough that I needed help, but I did. And I went to Georgia Lupi for a recommendation for a really good book designer. And that's how I met Lorenzo. And I hired Lorenzo for exploratory design work. And this was years ago. This is like 3 years ago. Like a 1 month project. And that's how we got the concept for the series. And the main concept was, a listener can't see, but the big idea is that you have a full, beautiful, detailed historic graphic on a hardback cover with gilt foil, debossed. And it's just like this beautiful thing. But then we cover up most of it with this hyper-modern minimal wrapper. And the idea is you can see the graphic a little bit because it's a partial dust jacket, and it sort of invites you to like peel it back and kind of discover. And that packaging represents what the series is all about, which is like very clean, modern presentation of all of this historic goodness. Okay, so that's a huge milestone, is not only the designs that Lorenzo comes up with, but also just meeting Lorenzo himself.
I remember seeing those designs and it finally clicked for me what the hell you were doing. It's like, oh, I get it now. So he really, you know, with a touch of that vision and designer in him, like brought it to life.
The next milestone is I knew if I wanted to do this on my own, I had to get some cash. And so there's a platform called Kickstarter that allows you to crowdfund. And so I did a $25 map on Kickstarter, a map of California, inspired by Isotype Institute Design. And, you know, I raised like $5,000 to go make my map. Like, I wanted to make the map and I wanted to see like what it, I wanted to know what it was like to make something real and ship it around the globe. And I also, I wanted to make the map, but like what I was really doing is I was experimenting. Did I like making a physical thing on my own? And did I like this platform called Kickstarter? Could I do this again? And so I ran this experiment and when did I do that? Like 2020? You know, like a couple years before these books came out, I was experimenting with platforms to figure out how do I actually want to produce these things. So that was another big milestone, and the result of that was that, you know, Kickstarter's a headache, making like shipping stuff around the world is a headache. It turns out to be a much bigger headache than it used to be because of the supply chain crisis and everything else that's happened since COVID. But that was another like significant milestone. And then there was this milestone that happened. When was it? It's 2022 now, so this must have been in late 2020. I remember I went for a paddle, and while I was on my kayak, I decided to go for all three books instead of just one, and I decided which three to go to, because we considered lots of different visionaries, and so I made the decision like these are the three. And then I think the next, I sort of like, I led Nightingale. So that was easy. George and I had already been collaborating on the translation of Murray. And so that was sort of there. But then the third leg of the stool was Willard. And for that, I needed Susan Schulten. So that was like the giant question mark. And that milestone came immediately afterwards. But like, that was like, this wouldn't be a series without Emma Willard. And we wouldn't have Emma Willard if I wasn't able to sell Susan Schulten on writing a book. And so that was the next giant milestone was that Susan signed up to the project. And I think that like, if I could speak for Susan and Lorenzo, is both of them signed on to working on this project because I was so excited and energetic and enthusiastic and, you know, compelling in my vision for it. And you know, all credit to them, because I couldn't do it if they didn't have trust in me and they didn't believe in the idea behind the project, you know, those two in particular. And so from there, the next big milestone is Lorenzo and I, you know, go off for months to try to raise money. We do raise money with the Kickstarter campaign, and then it's a giant slog actually finishing the books.
I loved even just putting together the Kickstarter campaign. That's like a whole project in itself, like you just said, just painting a picture of what these books could be if you had the funding to pay these contributors. And
we made this video for the Kickstarter campaign. Mm-hmm. When I say we, I wrote the script and I did the voiceover, but I did not make the video. And Lorenzo, you know, came back with a draft of the video that blew my mind. And he explained, like, I'm not really like that satisfied with the animations. And then just the power of the story of the project itself, you know, was enough that he recruited somebody to do some pro bono work for us animating the film. Like somebody who all they do is animation. Like that is their expertise. They understand animation, right? And like having, again, the power of the story of the series was enough to recruit that talent to elevate the story even higher. And so this—
You also got like Dan Rome on board, right? To help you with developing the story. And it's just like, it's such a collaborative effort.
Dan Rome and Dushka too were essential, because I had a very, I don't know, nerdy, one-dimensional sort of like, like really early on, I was like, we are never going to show a visionary's face, because that's not what it's about. And in particular, I was like, everybody shows a particular photograph of Florence Nightingale because she looks really pretty in that photograph, and that's how she's known. And I mean, no slight against her, but like what that photograph does is actually show, like, it masks her nose profile. And nobody ever shows a photograph of Nightingale with her like real nose. They always show this like head-on shot where like you can't see what her nose looked like, you know? And so like, basically they're, they're fitting Nightingale into modern, you know, like conventions of beauty. And that's like, that's the image that people associate with Nightingale. And so like my big-headedness was all, we're not going to show any portraits of any of these people. We're going to let their work speak for them. It's all about the work. Like that was, that's the energy I brought in. And Dan was like, RJ, you don't get it. Like what people like looking at most is faces. Like you need, you need some faces. So yeah, so that and other things, you know, were essential. I mean, the genius of Dan Rome is that he's so sophisticated, brilliant, and smart, and the way he packages all that intelligence is just so obvious and easy.
Yeah, and it's not easy, you know? It takes a lot of practice to get there.